all of history, there was only seven. Well, some people say there were nine, but I think that the best authorities say there were only seven red heifers. It was from Moses, Ezra, you know, etc. So it was a big, big deal. Remember how big the deal was of the that there were only four Nazarites from birth? Well, this is a bigger deal because without the ashes of the red heifer being extant, they can't purify the temple and they can't do any of the services. So anyway, 7 days before the heifer was to be burned, the priest destined for the service was separated, and he was kept in the temple in a place called the House of Stones, and it was in a cavern underneath the temple. It had been carved out of the bedrock, and he was daily sprinkled with the ashes of all the red heifers that were ever offered. And the reason they say that is because when they offered a new one, they mixed it into with the other ones. So in each of the ceremonies that extended them, there were some of the ashes, microscopic, of all of the ashes that have ever existed.
That was required, right?
It had to be.
Yeah.
It was called the House of Stones because all services in connection had to be performed only in vessels like stones, unsusceptible to being unclean. He was to wear his white priestly raiments. There was an arched roadway leading from the east gate of Jerusalem. And this is kind of important. We've never talked about this, but it was an arched archway that went over the valley of Hinnom and to the Mount of Olives. Okay? It was double arched. In other words, how can I say this? There were pillars in the valley that held up this walkway across. It was supposed to be a really incredible structure. And it was double arched because, again, in case the stones had touched uncleanliness, so they had to have at least a cubit's length between any possibility of the pillars touching. So they did this weird construction so there was no possibility of defilement. On the day, as you all know, the courtyards in Jerusalem were built over bedrock, and beneath them was a hollow of at least a cubit handbreadth, which served as protection against something dead that was farther down in the depths.
Would this include fossils?
Yeah. Anything dead. Okay, on the Mount of Olives, the elders were waiting. The priest immersed himself, his whole body, in water. Then he moved after he had gone across this thing. He had to bathe to do this whole number. Then he moved towards the pile of cedar, pine, and fig wood, which was heaped in the form of a pyramid. It was a huge, huge pile of wood, probably about the size of this house. But it was intense, and it was done in such a way so that it would force the fire, the heat of the fire, into the center, which is, you know, the pyramid would do that anyway, but they intermingled the wood and intermingled types of wood so it would be the hottest possible fire there.
From all the stuff we've studied, they probably went over each piece of wood and got bugs out and made sure it was the right kind.
No, it didn't matter if bugs were in this wood.
Oh.
The only thing that couldn't have bugs in the wood was on the wood for the altar, the burned altar. I mean, the brazen altar. Okay, so it's a combination of cedar, pine, and fig wood, which was heaped in the pyramid form, and it was an opening in the middle facing the west. And you got to understand this. There's the East Gate of Jerusalem. Let's assume that's west. So the East Gate of Jerusalem is coming out facing this way, right? So you're standing over here across the Valley of Kidron. On the other, on the
Hinnom or Kidron?
Both, the Hinnom. There's an archway over. You're outside the camp, but you're looking so that you can see the Holy of Holies. Okay? Through this. And that's, and the, where the, this heifer was taken in the middle of all this big pile of wood, the priest, and you'll see in a minute how they had to turn the neck of the heifer to face that way. And the priest had to always be in that side of the Holy of Holies. And all this is important, I'll get into later. Into this, the red heifer was thrust. He was bound with his head toward the south and face looking to the west. The priest standing east of the sacrifice, his face also looking to the west. You understand? So now the priest is here, the heifer is here. His head is bent so that it's this way. All, everything pointing. Crystal is the type of the Holy of Holies.
God.
Amy Callis.
Let's pick that window. This window is
bad. Now, he slew the sacrifice with his right hand. And remember, they had the two-edged, the double-edged sacrificial knife that, in one fell swoop, they cut quickly. And they did always use the same movement. It was a particular kind of movement that's still used today in kosher butchers. So that it cuts in such a way and so quickly that none of the adrenal glands release the adrenals into the bloodstream in the anxiety. In other words, it has to be gentle, sure killing so that otherwise it won't be kosher. He slew the sacrifice with his right hand, and he caught some of the blood with his left in a vessel. Now seven times he dipped his finger in it, sprinkling it towards Crystal. Crystal's going to get all bloody because it's sprinkling blood right at her. He's sprinkling blood toward the Holy of Holies, which he could see through the opening, and he wiped his hands clean on the body of the heifer, but after it was dead only.
So where did he get the blood that it was sprinkling?
He just had slit the heifer's neck.
Somewhere in the
he, and there was a vessel underneath that caught the blood.
Yeah, I didn't hear that part.
Now immediately, quickly, very quickly, he left the pyramid and he kindled a fire. As soon as the flames burst forth, the priest the flames burst forth. And it was really intensely hot, and then there was a time in which a really disgusting thing happened. The heifer burst. When the heifer burst,
did everybody go for cover?
No. Oh. It's a great honor to get smacked. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. It was just,
on your white.
I just made that up.
The people with fighting
watermelon once again.
The priest. Standing, he stood outside, took three items in his hand. He held one up in his right hand and he said, "Is this cedar wood?" And the assembled crowd yelled, "Yes, it's cedar wood." And then he threw that into the fire. And then he said, "Is this hyssop?" And the crowd had to witness that it was hyssop. And then he threw that into the fire. And then he said, "Is this scarlet?" And it was scarlet wool, the color of blood. He said, "Is this scarlet?" He said, "Yes." And he threw that into the fire. The hyssop, the cedar, and the scarlet were the statutes in the Bible. And it was to call to mind the statutes. Remember what a statute is? Okay. He then bound, well, excuse me, he didn't throw them into the fire one at a time. He didn't throw them into the fire individually, forgive me. He bound the cedar, the hyssop, and the scarlet and he threw the bundle into the burning fire. Now, the other part that I forgot to tell you, that the fire, what was used for kindling for this, was dried palm branches. Now, there's all kinds of little rules that nobody understands. There was the wool, the scarlet that tied the hyssop and the cedar together had to be long enough so that it would hang down below the bundle a certain distance. The fire had to be kindled specifically by the palm branches. You could only use cedar, hyssop, and scarlet. Now each of these have incredible typical meanings, or else they're just some vain superstition. So we hopefully will understand what they are by the time we finish. Okay, then all of this intense fire it's like in a crematorium. It burned the heifer with its blood, its dung, its hooves, its hair. Everything was burned, totally consumed. The burnt remains were then beaten into ashes by sticks and stone mallets, and they were passed through several courses of sieves. The ashes were divided into three parts. One was kept in the temple terrace called the Chel. One was kept on the Mount of Olives, and then part of it was distributed among a certain course of priests. Now the next thing that was to happen was you had to find, now all this had to happen before anybody could before anybody or anything could be declared clean. That's a big deal.
Did they run out of the, they saved some of the old to mix with the new,
right.
But did they run completely out before a new heifer was brought forth?
No.
Or could they control that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, they started looking for the heifer. You have to believe. Do you understand that there are a bunch of instances in the Bible where an incredible knowledge of genetics had to exist? In Laban's, I mean, in Jacob's working for Laban, in which he did these incredible deals with the spotted cows. The whole process of getting sheep and other sacrifices that were without blemish, where not even two follicles could be off. The red heifer was the most important, the most difficult to find. But all of these sacrificial animals had to be, I mean, they had to be incredible genetic engineering to get them to.
You think somebody might have been, some guy was like head of
Mr. Science,
trying to get the perfect red heifer?
Yeah.
And mating them and stuff.
Yeah, sure. I bet they bred them. They bred the different.
Or a Lewis.
All right. This is probably really arcane, but it keeps going through my head. If you got a great big pile of wood and a cow in the middle of it, and you set the whole thing on fire, when the fire goes out, how do you know what's wood and what's cow?
You don't.
The wood part of the. So the whole thing became whole.
Right.
Because cool. It splattered on the wood.
So the instrument of the cow's death, the all of those. Yeah.
Okay. Now let's go to the law. Go to Leviticus 14. Well, now tell you what let's do. Let's just take a minute. Have we ever read Leviticus 13 and 14? Not Leviticus, excuse me. Numbers, 19. I'm dealing with leprosy in one instance and ashes of the red heifer in another instance. I get them confused.
I think we did.
About 4 years ago.
Okay, well, let's...
No, we just read it.
Can we just read it?
I think so.
Which one?
Take it to a clean place and blah, blah, blah.
Okay, let's just take a minute.
You might have read it. You're in
a
stale or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably. Which one of them?
Numbers 19. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, This is the ordinance of the law which the Lord hath commanded, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring thee a red heifer without spot, wherein is no blemish, and upon which never came a yoke. And ye shall give her unto Eleazar the priest. Now, the reason he gave her, Eleazar was the one that was going to do this shtick with the red heifer couldn't be the high priest. He had to be the successor to the high priest.
Because the high priest couldn't be unclean?
High priest couldn't be unclean. This is the ordinance of the law. Without spot, no blemish, which never came a yoke, and he shall give her unto Eleazar the priest, that he may bring her forth without the camp, and one shall slay her before his face. And Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger, and sprinkle of her blood directly before the tabernacle of the congregation seven times. Now, there's a whole tract of the Talmud, a whole volume of the Talmud called Parah, that's all it deals with, is this red heifer. You want to get arcane and real little writing and all the stuff that I'm teaching. I mean, it's like, that was like going through a haystack to find the needle. I mean, it's so much horseshit. It's probably not horseshit, but I don't understand it. So. And one shall burn the heifer in his sight, her skin, her flesh, her blood with the dung, and shall he burn. Now again, in every other sacrifice, the burning is the end result. This is the beginning. In every other sacrifice, the blood is never burned. In every other sacrifice, obviously the dung. I mean, they try to give the cow an enema before they do something with it. But here, the blood, the dung, everything is burned. And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet and cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. Then the priest, he's just done all that stuff. Then the priest shall wash his clothes, and he shall bathe his flesh in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp. And the priest shall be unclean until evening. So the priest, by the action of doing this, is unclean, which is incredible. And he that burneth her shall wash his clothes in water, and bathe his flesh in water, and be unclean until the evening. And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, and lay them up without the camp in a clean place. And it shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for a water of separation. It is a purification for sin.
So you had to have some clean people sitting around waiting for this to go through.
Right. And he that gathereth the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes, and be unclean until the evening. And it shall be unto the children of Israel and unto the stranger that sojourneth among them for a statute forever.
Why are they unclean for the evening?
Huh?
If they were clean,
they're unclean until evening. Because evening is marks the beginning of the day. It's the new day, the old.
7 days.
Huh?
I didn't know if they'd be doing that.
No, that's you're thinking of leprosy.
Oh, yeah.
This is touching the dead body. Now, the ones that prepared it were unclean until evening. Do you understand that? But the one that touched the dead body is unclean for 7 days, just like leprosy. Okay?
Well, did you say that a man that's clean gathers up the ashes, but
that he's unclean.
Gathered up the ashes, it turns out to be unclean, but that heifer is what he used
to cleanse them. That's why.
Okay.
That's the mystery. And I want you to hear this, because everything that's talked about here is a description of us. All right. And he that gathereth the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. And it shall be unto the children of Israel and to the stranger that sojourneth among them for a statute forever. He that toucheth the body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. The dead body, excuse me. He shall purify himself with it on the third day, and on the seventh day he shall be clean. But if he purify not himself the third day, then the seventh day shall he not be clean. Whosoever toucheth the dead body of any man that is dead, and purifieth not himself, he defileth the tabernacle of the Lord, and that soul shall be cut off from Israel, because the water of separation was not sprinkled upon him. He shall be unclean, his uncleanness is yet upon him. This is the law. When a man dieth in a tent or in a building, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. Now, you understand, when you picked up the cross, you died in the tent. You died in the tabernacle. You got that? All the stuff in the New Testament with regard to picking up the cross, with regard to being crucified, all has to do, I mean, it can't be understood unless you understand this. So if you die, if somebody dies in your you're a tabernacle. It's the scriptures to clearly say you're a tent. I mean, that's that word is should be tabernacle. But the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole universe, has tabernacled within you. But the old you has to die in the tent, in the tabernacle. It gives a very specific way in which that uncleanness must be dealt with. Have any of you gone through that? Even though you're, you know, Mike died in the tent. The waters. I mean, like in your old church, like.
Oh, that's your church.
You got sprinkled, that didn't.
Huh? No. All right. Have you ever done that, Harry?
I thought it was Catholic.
Huh? We did confirmation.
Catholics don't.
I thought that was why you got baptized.
Yeah, but baptized coming out of the water supposedly left all that stuff in there, and you've risen from the water and you're clean.
Laid behind them.
Where's the ashes of the red heifer in it?
Never heard of the ashes.
I ain't never heard about that. That just.
What says it's a statute forever?
They didn't do that in Lutheran church and Methodist church.
She says it's statute forever. What are you going to do with that?
That's for Jew people.
Huh?
Time ended when Christ was crucified.
Yeah, that's the old
stuff. That's for Orthodox Jews.
is that the way you deal with the whole Old Testament?
Yeah,
you just turn it on
before four times.
Everything you don't understand, you just sort of trivialize.
Got it. It's worked before. Yeah.
There's no songs about the red heifer. How would I know about it?
Yeah.
Theology can't be songs.
No hymns.
No hymns about the red heifer, baby.
It's not for us to know.
That was the catch-all.
Listen carefully. Whosoever toucheth the dead body of any man that is dead, and purifieth not himself, defileth the tabernacle of the Lord, that soul shall be cut off from Israel, because the water of separation was not sprinkled upon him. He shall be unclean. His uncleanness is yet upon him. This is the law. When a man dieth in a tent, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. And every open vessel which hath no covering bound upon it is unclean. And whosoever toucheth one that is slain with the sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. And for an unclean person shall they take of the ashes of the burnt heifer of purification for sin, and running water shall be put thereinto in a vessel. And a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water, and shall sprinkle upon the tent, and upon all the vessels, and upon the persons that were there, and upon him that touched a bone, or one slain, or one dead, or a grave. And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day, and on the seventh day, and on the seventh day he shall purify himself and wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean at evening. But the man that shall be unclean and shall not purify himself, that soul shall be cut off from among the congregation, because he hath defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water of separation hath not sprinkled upon him, he is unclean. And it shall be a perpetual statute unto them, that he that sprinkleth the water of separation shall wash his clothes, and he that toucheth the water of separation shall be unclean until evening. And whatsoever the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the soul that touches it shall be unclean until evening.
Okay. We've all gone more than 7 days. So, like we're all cast out.
You're still unclean.
There's no physical way to get clean because we don't have the ashes red heifer anymore.
So what?
So there we are.
So there's Christ.
Perpetual state.
Yes.
And so
must be declared clean by the priest.
So how did, so maybe I've heard already, but I just forgot in this instant. So how did Christ...
We got some posturing going on here.
So how did Christ blow
back pedaling?
We know you really know the answer to this.
He's like
question.
A good defensive guy.
Maybe I should just like finish the copy.
How did Christ do this?
Because we're
He didn't.
We do.
He empowered us so that this becomes the red heifer that must burn. That's why.
But the water, I'm not there either. I understand the red heifer idea, but I don't understand the water part. Where's the water? Have we done this yet? Do I know the answer?
Out of his belly, he that believeth in me, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. The Holy Spirit, well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
So I figured, but it's kind of like...
We haven't studied it yet.
Okay, good.
We haven't missed it. We haven't studied it.
He's so worried,
you know. I'm anxious.
All right. I want you all in the next... And you all that ain't here.
Just get us, man.
You got to make a list.
Another list?
Think of a list.
And it's the list of where you have touched a dead body or a bone.
Well, let's start with Burnett since he's ready.
We're not doing it tonight.
What if you live with a dead body?
Where you go?
Yeah, what if you live with a dead body?
It's called Marco. What is that called?
Necronarcissism.
Narcolepsy.
Narcolepsy. You got trouble. That's what you got.
It's nitrogen narcosis.
Necromancy.
Huh? What'd you say?
Narcolepsy was like a little joke. But necromancy is the act of having intercourse with a dead body.
Who would do that?
You'd be surprised.
All right. Let's just stop a minute.